Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. We have a studio full of expert analysts to talk about all of the news today. We're going to be talking about the Kennesaw State cheerleading squad, which took a knee a couple weeks ago at a football game, and they were not invited onto the field during the national anthem from that point on. We're now learning that perhaps there was political pressure applied to KSU President Sam Olens. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. We'll also talk about the fact that Greg Bluestein, who is one of our panelists today, has a really interesting report in the Political Insider saying that one of Stacey Abrams' top deputy chiefs campaign. did an interview with Sputnik News, which is one of those organizations, a Russian organization that's being investigated by the FBI for trying to influence the election. We're going to talk just a bit about Zell Miller a little bit later. And to start things off, as we introduce Greg Bluestein, a political reporter for the AJC, it's Wednesday. We always love you on Wednesdays, Greg.
Glad to be here.
I mean, we like you every day of the week, but we're happy you're here on Wednesday.
I'm especially peppy on Wednesday.
Howard Franklin, Democratic political consultant, a government affairs guy, a lobbyist down at the state capitol, is back with us. Thanks for being here,
Thank
Howard.
You for having me.
You got a candidate in the governor's race yet?
I have not made a decision in the governor's race. We got a mayor's race here, in case you guys hadn't noticed.
Well, I'm talking to the statewide audience, so I wanted to ask you about that first, but
Fair
I understand
enough.
That. And Kyle Wingfield, you read his columns in the AJC on Thursdays and Sundays. Kyle, can you also already tell us what we're going to see on Thursday in your column? Or are you still thinking about it?
No, it's in the can.
It's tomorrow.
Deadline comes early on these days. but I'm here because I love you, Bill. So, it's on the bipartisan health care deals announced yesterday and whether it's all it's cracked up to be.
I am so glad you said it. You know, we had talked earlier today about, is there a possibility we could do a show with no Trump news in it?
Or
and
healthcare.
The answer is no. Just so you know, President Trump has been for the bipartisan compromise. Today, out of nowhere, he said, well, really, I'm against the bipartisan compromise. We're not going to talk about it until later in the show because we want to give the president a chance over the next 45, 50 minutes to maybe change his mind again. But we'll get to that a little bit later. But let's start with this really interesting story, Greg, unfolding up at Kennesaw State University. A few weeks ago, the Kennesaw State cheerleaders took the field and during the national anthem decided to kneel in protest of racism, whatever thing else they would say they were trying to make a point about. And the following week, they were not on the field. KSU President Sam Olens, the former state attorney general, said, well, that was not my call. That was something that the athletic department had decided previously. We want to showcase letting them come out to the cheers of the crowd. Well, what you have a colleague who has gotten a hold of these really interesting text messages that suggest maybe there was political pressure.
Yeah, our AJC colleague Maris Lutz decided to test that, and she filed an Open Records Act for the text messages sent by Cobb County Sheriff Neil Warren about this incident, and she found that he and State Representative Earl Earhart, who represents a Cobb County-based district, had boasted in a series of text messages about pressuring Olens to keep the school's cheerleaders off the field. There's a series of messages, and one of them, Earhart seemed to confirm that Olens had caved to the pressure. He wrote, he had to be dragged there, but with you and I pushing, he had no choice. Thanks for your patriotism, my friend.
And Neil Warren, who is, we all know, who have been here for a while, a very conservative guy, he sent a text to Earhart initially saying, legally, I'm not sure they can stop or do anything to stop someone from this un-American act, all in uppercase letters, but clearly, they made an effort to do that. You know, Kyle, it's really kind of interesting. Number one, we're going to see how Sam Olens responds. But here's a guy, Sam Olens, got out of partisan politics, probably very happy to free himself of it. And here he is up at KSU, and he's right back in the thick of it again.
Yeah, and let me preface this by saying I haven't seen all the text messages. I've seen, you know, what all of you have seen, what was reported in the paper. I'll throw this little caveat out there. I have never, ever heard of elected officials taking credit for something that someone else did. So there's a chance here that Sheriff Warren and Representative Earhart are sort of self-congratulating one another here over something that may or may not have come due to their actions. It could be a coincidence. I don't know. Again, there may be more there that puts that theory away.
That's really a good point. That's a good point, which is probably why we should hear from Sam Olens on this. You know, Howard, the other thing, of course, when Olens was named to the job without a national search,
that's right,
and because of the record he'd established, a conservative record as attorney general, there was a lot of protesting that went on up there on the campus, faculty and students. It calmed down fairly quickly because Olens is a very collaborative guy. He's the sort of person who will meet with you, talk to you openly, and it all kind of went away, or it seemed to. The question is whether it's now going to be triggered all over again.
I got to imagine some folks will, if the reporting bears out the story as it was initially told, I got to imagine it will flare up again. And I, to your point you made, yes, a conservative record as attorney general, but also an activist record. If you down at the Capitol like I was, I mean, he was almost making laws by some of the proclamations and decisions that the office was taking on. So I do imagine you'll see a little more activity around that.
And I think this bears more scrutiny on Earl Earhart as well. He said in a statement to the AJC that he was acting as a private citizen, but any higher education administrator who gets anything from Earl Earhart has to pay attention because as the chairman of the subcommittee of higher education appropriations, he controls the purse strings for tens of millions, maybe even hundreds of millions over the years of appropriations to higher education institutions. So basically, if you want a project done in the Georgia's higher education system, you need his approval.
Yeah, and you know, this is an important story, and I didn't mean to poo-poo that earlier, but one thing it previews, we have not seen in college football, which of course is a big thing in the state of Georgia, we have not seen players having a chance to act like the NFL players and take a knee or not, because they're not on the field at all. This was sort of a unique situation because the cheerleaders are. We're about to hit college basketball season, and the basketball players generally are on the court for that. So this is probably not a one-time story. I would look for this to be a story going forward as we get into that season.
Yeah, I think that's right. By the way, we should point out the NFL, which is where all of this basically started, is in there. They're having a team president meetings in New York, and Roger Goodell was expected to have a news conference right about now. We'll keep track of it because one of the things we expect him to talk about is whether the owners have decided they want a rule regarding what happens at the anthem. We'll see. Greg Bluestein, the one thing that we should point out is that the KSU owl also took a knee during the day. And I have to tell you, not being a naturalist, I had no idea owls even had knees.
It is something of a hoot when a state lawmaker makes national news for questioning the right of Scrappy the Owl.
All right. I want to move on to another story that I already alluded to. We'll start talking about it before we have to take a break. Greg, what is going... Stacey Abrams, her deputy chief of staff, gave an interview to Sputnik News, widely reputed to be a propaganda arm of the Russian government and being investigated right now by the FBI for interference with the American presidential election.
Yeah, this was, his name is Marcus Farrell. He was a former Bernie Sanders outreach coordinator, and he was the deputy campaign manager for Stacey Abrams' campaign. And he had been a regular guest on the show, but in August, he gave an interview that focused partly on Stacey Abrams' campaign. He talked about Stone Mountain and her call to remove the Confederate leaders from Stone Mountain's face. He talked about the Netroots protest that we've talked about so much on this show. And he talked about how a Democrat can win in not just Georgia, but around the nation in the midterms. After that news came out, he was asked to resign. The campaign said he did not follow protocol by clearing these on-the-record interviews with the campaign staff. And it just seemed like they wanted to distance themselves as quickly as they could to any appearance that he was on Russian media on behalf of the candidate.
All right. Yes, they did act very quickly on the campaign to distance themselves from this. Let's do this. We got to get in a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about whether this is going to have any longer range impact or whether they acted quickly enough. But, you know, we're ending our fall fundraising drive in the next day or so. And this is a time for you to contribute. I feel privileged that two of our all-stars here at GPB Radio, Ricky Bevington and Bert Wesley Huffman, are going to tell you how you can help us out. Welcome back to Political Rewind, where three afternoons a week we get to bring in tremendously talented and smart panels of insiders to talk with you about what's happening in the world of politics, in large part because of your generous contributions. If you've already contributed in this pledge drive, thank you so much for doing that. Greg Bluestein, Kyle Wingfield from the AJC. We're also really glad to have you, Howard Franklin, Democratic political consultant here. Howard, we've just talked about how Stacey Abrams' deputy campaign manager gave this interview to Sputnik News. They immediately let him go. Does this have any? Is this a one-day story, unless something else develops?
I imagine it's a one-day story, and I think some of the other stories that have taken some attention are some of the national politicians that have also gotten tangled up with the Russians, either unknowingly, in most cases unknowingly. I imagine that's the case here as well.
And I think there will be more coverage of Russia's interference in Georgia as well. I mean, there's already an NBC News report that federal investigators are investigating Facebook ads, not supporting a certain candidate, but about certain issues like immigration. Issues like that.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting to watch unfold. Kyle Wingfield, let's move on to another Georgia issue, another gubernatorial issue. You know, every time we talk about Republican candidate Mike Williams, a state senator, we point out that he has done everything he can to make the kind of statements that assure him of news coverage. And now he has not only said that he thinks bump stocks, which were so associated now with the Las Vegas massacre, should not be outlawed, but he's giving one away just to show that he believes these are really valuable accessories for your semi-automatic weapon.
So see if you can follow this line of reasoning. The line of reasoning is that because bump stocks make a trained marksman less accurate.
Right, that was Williams' argument.
The shooting in Las Vegas could have been worse. Now, I think that makes a huge assumption that this non-military trained individual in Las Vegas was the kind of marksman for whom that would be true and not the kind of person who was trying to make up for a lack of marksmanship with the volume of bullets fired, which is what I believe is probably more likely. But in an effort to show that this is something that he supports, he's taking this thing, which he has described as wildly inaccurate, and trying to put it in the hands of a loyal supporter. This is just another publicity stunt. You know, get your name in the news. It's all he has. It doesn't seem at this early stage to be working for him. He's trying to run a Trump-type campaign, but he isn't Donald Trump. I'm not. It's a really good political science experiment to see if anyone who doesn't have that outsized reality show personality like Donald Trump can be like Donald Trump on the campaign trail.
But he gets attention. We're talking about it every time Mike Williams does something that seems kind of outrageous. We talk about it. Did we in the media, including me, not learn from the Trump campaign that sometimes we ought to leave this stuff alone, Howard?
Well, I think it's hard to leave it alone, obviously.
Right.
And as we've seen with the president, you know, every day there's going to be something new to talk about. I think to Kyle's point, already having a well-known outsized personality, I think, helped Trump in ways that are hard to measure. And I'm curious, and I think it will be a test case as to whether or not you can go out and do what Trump did and have the same results. I think we had the same questions from Democrats in 2008 when Barack Obama, you know, surged to the presidency. And I think we had lots of Democrats saying, hey, I'm going to get on the internet, I'm going to raise a bunch of money, and that's going to get me the seat that I want.
So but
I,
oh, go ahead, finish that
so
statement.
So, yeah, I just think it's still an open question as to whether or not you can follow that.
But Greg, in this case, Mike Williams doesn't have the Republican lock on this to himself. The other candidates seem to be against any kind of outlawing of bump stocks. Is that right?
Yeah, not uniformly, but I did poll the other candidates, and Secretary of State Brian Kemp says that that no one was harmed by because guns and add-on devices do not kill people. Crazy, deranged lunatics like Stephen Paddock do. So he doesn't support the ban on bump stocks. Neither does Hunter Hill on a state level. And Casey Cagle said he wants the NRA to continue what it's doing, which is reviewing it. But on your point about whether or not the media is doing its job by you know, reporting this or buying into, you know, his line of attacks and campaigning, it's tough as reporters. He is a credible candidate for governor, so we can't, you know, we can't just
ignore it.
Yeah,
right.
He is one of four leading contenders for governor. There's a fifth who's sort of getting geared up now.
Well, just when you say he's one of four leading candidates, he's one of four leading mainstream Republican candidates.
Who have elected experience.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just as important that this happens so that I think we're talking about the partisan primary where this red meat may matter. I think in the general election, Democrats and independents, moderates need to know the things that he said so they can make an informed decision.
All right.
And it's up to us to put it in context too. This is as Jim Galloway did with this piece. He said this is the latest in a long string of attempts to grab attention.
Okay, let's move on to another subject that relates very specifically to Georgia. Greg, ever since Sally Yates was fired as acting Attorney General of the United States, there's been speculation: is she or isn't she going to be a Democratic candidate? Immediately, Democrats here were saying, oh my gosh, she's our dream candidate for governor. There's been a lot of talk about that. We on this show have said that those of us who've known Sally Yates for a long time really have had a hard time imagining her wanting to run for office. Well, this morning, she was on MSNBC talking about a variety of issues. And at the very end of the interview, Joe Scarborough asked her this question.
When are you going to run for something?
I have to tell you, you know, I've never been drawn to the idea of elective office.
Yeah,
so I have
this isn't about what you want. This is about what America needs. Just remember that.
Well, you know, I hope that someday maybe I'll have another opportunity for public service. Elective office, I'm having a hard time seeing, but yeah. but we'll see.
Somebody jump in. I don't see Sally Yates. I'd be shocked if she runs for public office, unless she really gets pressured. It's just not where she wants to do her service.
See, I would have been shocked if she had run in this cycle. But but I don't know about 2020 or 2022 or down the road. And there is a reason why she is making so many public appearances. She's making the rounds on TV. She's making rounds all over Atlanta. I saw her just last week at an event. So she is out and about in a very forceful way. And, you know, she's keeping her name out there.
I got 10 seconds. You agree? Maybe she could come back sometime?
You know what? I think she could come back in another capacity, not necessarily elected, which is how I heard
Howard,
what she said.
I'm skeptical, but hopeful.
You're hopeful she'll run. Well, I'm hopeful that as we come to the last day or so of our fall drive here, that those of you who listen to Political Rewind will help support the work we're doing to try to give you a smart, smart analysis of politics today. Let's go back to Ricky and Bert, who will tell you how you can do that. We said at the top of the show that there was no way we thought we could avoid talking about President Trump. We can't. Recently, he has put into the news questions about how U.S. presidents respond to the death of U.S. servicemen. And now we have a very specific case. LaDavid T. Johnson, a member of the military, was killed in an ambush in Niger recently. And It was part of this group of four who were killed that President Trump didn't say anything to the families about. Now he did call the mother yesterday, but she and the congresswoman from the family, not the mother, the wife, the widow, Frederica Johnson, I think is the, Frederica Wilson is the Democratic congressman. She this morning was on all the cable shows saying that President Trump treated the whole thing with disrespect, said he knew it, told the widow he knew what he was getting into, and this has caused a commotion. President Trump immediately tweeted, "She's lying." And he said, "I have the proof," in that tweet. And now the widow herself is saying, "No, no, that's what happened." And she thought it was really handled very, very poorly. Howard, you know, the larger question is, what is happening to us that the death of a U.S. serviceman and how a president responds has become a controversy in the news?
Yeah, I wish you hadn't thrown it to me first, because I think Trump has just thrown us into this space where up is down and down is up, and there's really just no way to know what he's going to say next or to put it in any sort of traditional category about how to expect him to respond or how people in his party, outside of his party, are going to respond. This morning, when the congresswoman was on, I saw her on Morning Joe. She was asked a couple times, "Are you politicizing this tragedy by even talking about this?"
And I thought that was a fair question.
Yeah, I thought so too, but it came at her a couple times, and she said, "Listen, I am just telling you what this widow told to me." And the idea that that's enough to spark a controversy just says a lot about who's in the White House.
Kyle, part of the issue here is that in his tweet, the president said Congresswoman Wilson is lying. "I have the proof," which he might not want to do. Said it suggests perhaps his phone calls are being recorded.
But not to mention that we've been through this before with the James Comey situation, and the, you know, were there tapes, and you know, if so, is everything being taped and all that? And then in the end, it seems that nothing was, so we don't know in this case either. I'll just say this. The respects that a United States president pays to the family of our soldiers who have fallen, that's something the president should never get wrong, and it's something that the president should not turn into a controversy in any way.
Greg, the other thing that happened here, and I'll allow you to expand on this, please. The president, in an interview with Fox Radio, also pointed out that John Kelly, his chief of staff, who lost a son in battle, never got a call from President Obama. John Kelly, ever since the death of his son, has tried to keep that private, mm-hmm. the death from becoming a public matter. He has said, "There are a lot of servicemen who've died. I do not want undue attention to my son." And now the president makes it public.
Yeah, put him in a very uncomfortable position. He gave a speech shortly after son was killed that was widely shared among readers in general, but also among military members as the perfect example of you know, how you reflect the loss of your son in the post 9/11 generation, and this forced him back in the forefront, I think, in a very uncomfortable way, he hasn't said anything publicly about it since Trump brought it to the level, but you kind of feel for the guy.
Okay, well, I don't know how much more of this there's going to be, but in fact, it's become a much bigger story ever since Trump the other day in the Rose Garden said he didn't think Presidents Bush or Obama had consistently been sensitive and responsive when there are soldiers' deaths involved. And it just seems like a sad debate to be getting into. The last time we checked the wires, the president has not reversed himself again on this compromised health care bill. You know, for a minute there, Greg, it looked like it might pick up some steam. Lamar Alexander, Republican, Patty Murray, Democrat, had arrived at a way of extending the payments from the feds to support health care for not the lowest income Americans, but the next level up.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like they were going to be able to work something out, a two-year deal. And the president for a while thought it was a good idea, and now he's back to saying it's a bailout for the insurance company.
Yeah, he's definitely qualifying that support. And it's interesting how quickly these things change, as you mentioned. He had several different positions about it yesterday, but his final position yesterday was supportive of it. The Wall Street Journal had a headline suggesting that it was very close to getting finished. Washington Post had a headline that was much more skeptical. And now we're seeing why, I guess, some Capitol insiders thought it was so skeptical, because he's qualifying his support. He's saying he can never, quote, support bailing out insurance companies who have made a fortune with Obamacare.
Kyle, I don't think, I don't think Mitch McConnell wins a lot of sympathy from many Americans, Republicans or Democrats. I got to say, you almost got to feel sorry for this guy trying to figure out where to go on issues with Trump changing his mind so often.
Well, yeah. And you know, one factor here, too, is it wasn't at all clear to me that the House was going to go for this.
That's the key. Yeah.
And so you do have to wonder if maybe the president got a little ahead of himself yesterday and then heard the feedback from the House and thought, well, maybe this isn't something that's going to go forward after all. The reason that I think a lot of Republicans are skeptical here, it's not really clear what they get out of this quote-unquote bipartisan deal. There's some very vague promises about flexibility for states, but they would be able to have catastrophic plans for more than just those who are under 30. That's maybe a good thing, although at this point, with open enrollment starting a couple weeks, that we're maybe a year out from that having any effect. And then the waiver ability that they would have had, it's not clear that it would have allowed them to do much more than they were doing already, because they still had to be comparable to what the Obamacare plans prescribe.
Howard, we sometimes, I've said this on the show before, we think of this as political maneuvering, bickering. We kind of chuckle about it, but the fact of the matter is the health care, the insurance of millions of Americans is at stake.
It's a big issue, and obviously we're seeing it play out here in Georgia, particularly with rural health care. So, and our state legislature also digging in and trying to come up with some solutions. You know, as much as I am drawn to feeling bad for Senator McConnell, I mean, these are lifelong politicians. This guy spent 30 years in the Senate, led the majority party, passed major legislation, and Trump in 8 or 9 months has just confounded his Republican Party. And I say his Republican Party. It's hard to feel bad for him, I got to say.
All right, we got to take another quick break. Actually, it's kind of a long break, but it's an important break. It's our opportunity to ask you to support the work we're doing here at GPB Radio. Bert and Ricky, it's all yours. Thank you to Bert and Ricky. By the way, if you listen to GPB Radio here in Metro Atlanta at 88.5, you hear what an extraordinary job Ricky Bevington does as host of All Things Considered every afternoon. And when I hear Bert Wesley Huffman, who is a senior manager here at our operation, both radio and TV, on the air, I wonder to myself, we're missing a bet not having him on the air more often. We need more of Bert in non-fundraising periods. Thanks to both of you for your help talking about us this afternoon. Greg, let's do a little roundup of congressional elections as they are starting to take shape for next year. Your colleague, Tamar Hallerman in the Washington Bureau, reports today that Karen Handel's stocking up big time. She's already got about almost $500,000 in the bank. Clearly, she's going to raise a whole lot more for her first full-term election in 2018.
Yeah, because she knows, and she's actually been fundraising on this, she knows that even if John Ossoff doesn't make a comeback bid, and he hasn't ruled that out yet, that there will be some sort of formidable Democrat in the race, and there's already two Democrats in that contest. Bobby Capel is a former TV anchor for the CBS affiliate here, and another candidate who ran in the April contest, who got a couple hundred votes, but he's coming back too, Richard Heatley.
What do we think? Howard, you're a Democrat. Is Ossoff coming back? And do you think Georgia Democrats want Ossoff to be the candidate? Or is there a feeling he should have been able to pull it off this last time?
I think there's a little bit of both. It's just an astronomical sum of money, and it's hard for us to fathom raising and spending that much and still missing the seat. But I do think, this amount of national attention and optimism, and then also rallying Democrats and progressives and moderates from around Metro Atlanta and around the state to come rally to his aid, I think, was definitely lifted a lot of spirits. So I think with a governor's race and a bunch of others, I think there is some appetite for someone like him.
But Kyle, it's once you're an incumbent, especially in the United States Congress, it's really hard to knock you out of that seat. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the facts back that up for sure. The other thing to think about him running next year versus this year, meaning John Ossoff, he was the only game in town nationally this year when he ran. Next year, you talk about Democrats trying to defend, 24 U.S. Senate seats, trying to win a host of governorships, including in this state. Instead of being the only game in town, he's to switch metaphors here, maybe playing third or fourth fiddle in terms of local political coverage and what everybody's watching. And I don't know what about that makes it more conducive for him to win. On top of, as you say, Karen Handel being an incumbent, having a chance to, you know, sponsor some legislation since she's not just any old backbencher after an election like that, and, you know, being able to really consolidate support in the district.
Let's move over just a little bit east, Greg, in the 7th Congressional District, which is now largely Gwinnett County. Rob Woodall's never had any kind of challenge in three terms? Is he coming up on it? Would he be running for his third term, I think?
Yeah, and he's had challenges, but he's easily fended
them
off.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah. There hasn't been any significant challenge. But this time around, a couple of Democrats who are really raising money in that potential race. Gwinnett County is moving more and more toward being certainly a purple district. That could be a competitive seat, especially if Democrats can raise money.
Yeah, this might be the second most interesting congressional matchup, or maybe the most interesting, depending on how things go, of next year. Two Democratic challengers outraised Rob Woodall during the third quarter, and a third who had a great quarter last time but didn't have the best quarter this time, still has a stockpile of money. The problem for Democrats is that, yes, Gwinnett is changing, and if the district was just Gwinnett alone, it would probably be a Democratic seat, but it also includes half of South Forsyth County, which is tremendously Republican, and Democrats know it, and they know their challenge is trying to cut into the GOP margin there, but that's not an easy task.
Howard, is it like, do you really have much hope that are Democrats making a smart choice by trying to win? I mean, you got to try to win a congressional seat.
You have to try to win. I think, for me, I think the bigger issue is how quickly these races become nationalized, right? When you get a roll call or, you know, a Cook report saying, hey, this might be a toss-up or this looks like it might be competitive for the incumbent, I think it does raise our level of expectation, and our hopes are dashed all the more when we're not successful at the ballot box come November.
All right. You got want to get a last word in here before we move on? All right. Kyle Wingfield says, I think it's all been said. And in fact, we've said as much as we can on today's show. We're just about out of time. So my thanks to Greg Bluestein, to Kyle Wingfield, both of the AJC. We'll look for your column tomorrow in the AJC, Kyle. Howard Franklin, thank you for coming back. And as the next year progresses, we'll try to get you in here to talk about Democratic politics. Absolutely. As often as we can.